My name is Beth, and I'm a nurse at St. Joseph Hospital. And simply, I have identified very quickly that it is an off day if I do not have a handful of patients who are tox positive for methamphetamine. And as it has been disturbing to me, I'm sure it's disturbing to you, and that's why we're all here. We're all here to see if there's anything that can be done, and I think there's a lot of energy in this room, and there's already some leadership emerging and a lot of positivity. So that's all I really have to say, and I'm going to let Michael Fratt can take over.
Wow. I'm falling in love with my community again today. First, I want to thank the over 1,500 and growing participants in the Humboldt Meth Abuse Awareness Project, a spontaneous outpouring of hope and compassion, and the highest bar for complicated discussions I've ever seen. So thank you to all the participants on the Facebook group. Next, I want to thank the about 400 and growing signatories to the online petition. I put it out to have somebody print it up. Did anybody print it up and bring it in? That's all right. We'll get it to whoever wants to see it or to whom it matters. I want to thank the elected officials that have participated over the course of the last 2 weeks. This effort has caught their attention and brought them out to join their community in thinking a bit outside the box and starting to put some light on a problem that's been so difficult for all of us. I want to thank the hardworking people on the front lines every day at public health, at mental health, in all the social service agencies, law enforcement, educators, parents, all of you, thank you for everything you've been doing. Thank you for showing up to think fresh about what you will be doing going forward, and you will have our support. Particularly, thank you to all of my colleagues in the healthcare roles. We bang it out every day. We've had our head down for a long time. And it's nice to know that we're not just doing what we do alone, that there's a whole community that really cares about itself. I want to thank all the teachers and the parents and the teenagers and the artists and the dreamers that make this community what it is. I want to thank the addicts in recovery. And I want to thank all of the addicts with the courage to ask for help. We hope to bring you help going forward from here. I want to dedicate this meeting to three individuals. One is Susie Seaman. She was one of three women that were run down on the road on Old Arcata Road about a year and a little bit ago. And when that happened, I got mad. I want to dedicate this event to Father Eric Reed. When he was bludgeoned to death in the rectory on New Year's Eve, I started off mad. But with the advice and clarity of my very close friend Jennifer, Father Eric Reed's death brought me to a state of compassion. And then a couple of days later, the third person I want to dedicate this event to, her name is Tricia Laggy. She's a little bit older than 30, and with her permission, I'll tell you, I met her hanging around the hospital 3, 4, 5 times a month for well over a year. She's a diabetic with a terrible meth problem, and I kind of loved her for reasons I could not explain. And she was on my service. I had to take care of her. She was a hassle to take care of because she was such a mess. She took such terrible care for herself. But some doctor took the opportunity when she was in the intensive care unit with a plastic tube shoved down her windpipe to take a picture of her pathetic self with her broken teeth and her spectacularly ill appearance. And then a few days later, I showed that to her. Well, just after Eric Fried was killed, out of nowhere, I got contact from Tricia. And she told me that picture is what made the difference. She told me that just that much persistent love and respect was enough to make the difference. And getting out of town and being supported by family out of town. And she's 3 years clean and sober. She can't see. She paid the price with her diabetes and her addiction. But she wanted to tell you all how much she wished she was here. Love and respect, a little bit of space is what it took to get her clean. So this experience here today with an overflow crowd going out the door and everybody standing, I appreciate your patience with all that. We had no idea what would really show up. This is an experiment, an inspired experiment. And our goal today is to translate a social media community catharsis into a flesh and blood structure for ongoing community action. I'm going to say that a different way. Whatever happens from this point forward is going to be because you do it. This is a duocracy. While I have shown, and Beth has shown, and others have stepped up and demonstrated and shown some leadership over the last couple of weeks, there are no leaders. There's only you. There's only our community. And it's going to be entirely up to you and the magic of this space. If we can create a structure as you look across the tables at each other, to be motivated and inspired to actually put it out going forward. There's nobody to say, you should do this, you should do that, we ought to do that. There's none of that. Whatever we accomplish on the effort of each and every one of you. So thank you so much for giving me something to believe in and for such a hopeful turnout. Thank you.
My name is Roger James. For those of you I have not met, my partner Mary Gelinas and I are the co-directors of the Cascadia Center for Leadership, which is a program of the Humboldt Area Foundation. And I was asked today to facilitate, meaning make it easy. That's what facilitate means. So what I'm hoping to do is very lightly to guide us through to make sure that this hour and a half is a wonderful use of all the precious energy that you bring here. So for today, we're hoping to do three things. One is to understand the context for this session. Where did this come from? And I think Beth and Michael have said how we got into this room today and what's brought you all here. The second thing, and the bulk of the time really, is getting agreement on leaders and membership of issue-specific working groups. This is the beginning of the hard work that Michael was alluding to, inspired by all of you being here. So you'll see around the room there are 10 areas that may be of interest to you, from community alliance building through public awareness, housing, treatment, parenting support, prevention. After we've gotten a chance to make sure you're in the room and you've had a chance to say your name and why you're here, we want to give you a chance to work with one of those groups. Just take 30, 35 minutes, and we'll give you some specific tasks. There's a leader for each of those groups to help you start thinking about, if we're really serious about looking at treatment or teen outreach, what do we already know? What's been done? Who's working on this? Where is it working elsewhere? What are the questions that we need to be asking in our community and elsewhere to lead to answers? and then have a chance to quickly report back on each of those gatherings. And the last thing is getting agreement on next steps. I agreed to be part of this because I'm assured and I believe in my heart that this is the beginning or continuation of dealing with a really, really challenging problem in our community. And I wouldn't be here if I didn't believe that action that really deals with it would come from here. And again, as Michael said, that's really dependent on all of us. So before we launch into activity, what I'm going to suggest is that you just turn to, you know, a couple of people, two, three, four people at your table, people maybe you don't know, and just tell them your name and why is it important for you to be here? Just in a sentence or two, why is this the best use of your time on this afternoon? So just take a few minutes, do that, and then I'll ask for some examples. Hello, 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 hello. So if we, in a different meeting, in a different world, we would have time to hear from everybody. But I would like to get just a feel for what you heard from somebody you were talking to about why they're here that touched you or gave you a sense of the importance of being here. Just a couple of people, if you'd be willing. And you have to say it really loud. Great. Thank you.
Talk to a lady who was at the press conference on New Year's Day or New Year's Eve, and that obviously has touched the whole community. And people that really care and people are a part of it and have family members that
can't hear you. I'll just stand up and
a lady that we spoke to was at the press release. The press thing when that happened on New Year's Eve or New Year's Day, and how much it touched all of us, and also family members that don't seem to be getting help, and their personalities have changed, is affecting so many of us.
Great. Let's get a couple more. Yes, please. Yeah.
Hi, Roger. I'm Liana. We heard everything from I don't feel safe necessarily. I always thought Humboldt was kind of a safe place to live, not feeling really safe on our streets, to can we turn it from law enforcement and make it a health issue rather than a legal issue, to I'm here because there was a call for the business community, and in my line of work, we see a lot of people that can't get hired because they can't pass pre-employment screens,
right,
which leads to a cycle of economic downturn. Lots of issues to care about kids. I care about families. I care about our future and our community.
Great. Thanks, Liana. Let's get just a couple more, and then we'll go. Yeah.
I just wanted to say some. My family and my parents and I came up here 21 years ago this month. We came up on the Greyhound. We were homeless. And my parents left San Bernardino because they were doing speed. And they stopped, and they had me. You can't hang around your friends that are still getting messed up and using drugs because they don't care about you. They care about the drugs. They're going to drag you in with their garbage. So we came up to beautiful Humboldt, and we lived in Eureka. And they've been clean ever since. In Eureka, I've lived there most of my life. I just can see people walking on the street. My sister's homeless up here and has problems from it. But that being said, obviously, I'm doing all right. And to see all these people, you know, people that are probably my neighbors in the Winco area, if you know what I mean, and people that are police officers or ex-council members and mayors and such. I mean, this needs to happen more often, and this is a good first time here.
Great. Thanks. Let's get just one more, and then go ahead.
I'm talking to a few teachers in the school system and seeing the problems that we're seeing with the kids in school based on their parents' actions is what's spurring it for people partner. Whispering for me, as well as a personal issue right now with a person that I know that's got a meth issue. And to see it in our society and to fear walking down some of the streets is wrong. And to see this moving forward is huge. And I appreciate everybody that's here, and I hope that we can make a difference.
Great, thank you. So I just want to acknowledge, I mean, we've got 150, 200 people here. Each of you, it's like the blind man and the elephant. You know, it depends on which part you're touching, which part, how you think the elephant looks or feels. Everybody's got their story. We all have our connections to it. And I want to acknowledge that and honor and respect your experiences with regard to this problem. I would be curious, if we can just get a quick show of hands, how many people are here from Health and Human Services, Social Services? How many from police, probation? How many people either have had the problem themselves or family members? And what other group did we miss?
Educators.
Counselors, parents.
Elected officials.
Neighborhood safety. Okay. So we've got healthcare. We've got the community represented here in all of its different aspects.
Clergy.
Thank you, clergy. So just this is an opportunity for many of us, I think, a unique opportunity to learn, not only to share, but to learn. We're going to have you get opportunities to chat with each other now in just a couple of minutes. And I'm going to suggest a couple of conversation guidelines, ground rules, that might help us all get the most out of today. So one, I'm going to suggest really listen to understand. There is a wealth of knowledge, information, and experience here that we can tap. And so really, really listening hard to hear what the persons you're working with are saying. Be as succinct as you can. I know there are a million stories. Let's try to go from the story to the essence of what you're trying to say. We're going to stay on time and on topic. This is in honor of you. We will end at 5, hard end, and it will not be an endless meeting. And we're going to get a lot of stuff done. And that depends on all of us staying on time and on topic. And this is not about blame. It's not about assignment of blame, who did what, who didn't do what, who's not pulling their weight, any of those things. So if you feel yourself or hear yourself start saying and say, it's somebody's fault, you might want to reel that one back in for today. Okay? So here comes the opportunity to get up and really start to work. As I said, there are 10 topic areas here. You get a chance to work with one of them to the extent that you can. If you want to move around, you can, but you're going to get most out of it if you are, in fact, staying with one. There'll be a leader in each of those groups. There's pens and paper so that you can record your thoughts. And here's what the leaders are going to be doing for a 30-minute period. They're going to designate a recorder, somebody who's actually going to write with the pens that are provided your thoughts. Gather contact information. Make sure you know who's there, so they've got sign-up sheets. We didn't have a big one out here because it's really the working groups that are going to have the biggest impact in future. Get your introductions, your first name, why you're here, and start looking at what's already happening, what's happening in this community in the areas of teen outreach or housing or enforcement policing, and then generate a series of questions. What are the questions that need to be asked from here forward in order to really come to a new set of solutions? Apparently, from what I see here, what we're doing isn't working sufficiently enough for our community. So what do we need to be curious about and go out and find data about to see what other approaches might be? And those could be questions like, what are they doing elsewhere? What are the obstacles in our community that we have found to actually dealing more effectively with teen outreach? Assess the participation after today. That's kind of an awkward way of saying, check in the room, in those groups, who's willing to continue the dialogue after this meeting and do some actual honest-to-God work around answering those research questions, finding out how there might be pathways forward that haven't been discovered yet. And finally, just create an email list of those people who do want to participate so that information can be shared and disseminated. Okay? So we're going to give you 30 minutes. Yeah, go ahead.
Just since we've got so many people, what will it do so that, number one, we're all going to have to be super conscious of our volume. Number two, what I think we'll do is we'll take every other station and move it to the empty room across the way. So I'm going to call them out. If you're a facilitator or have an interest in those particular areas, just move in that direction to grab them off the wall and very quickly and efficiently move them over there. It will be public awareness, enforcement, policing, legislation, housing, and parenting support. So when we say go, don't hurt each other, but move those to the other room. Go.
So we're going to reconvene again in about 1 minute. If you want to go back to your original table, you may, but you could stay in your group because we're just going to hear from each of the groups briefly. Okay. Again, you don't need to move back to your original table. This is going to be about 20 minutes. If you want to stand, that's fine. If you want to sit in your group, that's fine. We basically want to hear a very brief report out from each of the groups, like 2 minutes. So have a seat. Get as comfortable as you can. Okay, we need to reconvene, which means the noise level has to go down so we can listen to folks. So, if I may, so what I'd like to do is take this microphone and simply hand it to each of the groups. And what we're asking for is a very brief, minute and a half of, here are a couple of key points that we made in our group, just so we can get a flavor of it. I know there's no way to take in this much information. There's a lot of work out there. So just want to get a flavor for what you heard. And then we'll hear all of these and then move toward closing with next steps after this meeting. So I'm just going to hand this, move it from person to person.
Hey, guys. Okay, I want to tell you this first. Something that a lot of us in our group didn't know is there's a place called the Humble Allies for Substance Abuse Prevention. Did you guys know this thing existed? I didn't. They're having a meeting on Wednesday, February 12th at 3:30. You should all go. A lot of us are going to go. What we want to do is find out what the alliances are.
I just want to remind you, when you throw things like that, somebody agreed to post that onto the Facebook group.
Okay.
You did?
We did.
Great.
We'll Facebook that. A lot of... Okay, what we're doing. So there's the Humble ASAP. There's curriculum in the high schools from public health. And this is a big deal. There's 3 inpatient facilities in our area. Only 4 of those beds are paid for by the county, which is not nearly enough, out of 60 beds. So if you don't have the money, then too bad. There's also the Humboldt Meth Abuse Awareness Group on Facebook, which I think is what he just said to post on. What can we do? We can bring our spiritual leaders together to build alliances. Include Southern Humboldt, because a lot of times people in Southern Humboldt feel disconnected from Northern Humboldt and Eastern, so keep all of Humboldt together in Humboldt. That doesn't make sense, but whatever. keep an email list to share what's going on with everybody, which kind of ties into keeping Southern Humboldt in, so everybody's got the same info. And find out who's talking to who, alliances, see what groups are already working together, and build more. Neighborhood watches, businesses, and social services. Definitely explore how we get more funding for the beds, for the treatment, because obviously 4 out of 60 is not nearly enough. Have a good day.
So this group over here is focused on perinatal and mothers and infants, and I got to give kudos to
the women and the men in this group, because this is people who care so much about women who are using and their babies who are born with those impacts. There is stuff going on. There's programs. There's not enough. We need to create protocols around when babies are born tox positive. How do we support that mom into being clean and sober? We listed programs that exist now. We listed programs that needed to be expanded. We've got a great Healthy Moms program, not in Southern Humboldt. So there's that theme again. It's in Eureka, right? How do we move these programs, which are great, but they exist in Eureka? We need a foster home for positive moms and babies so they can learn how to parent and keep their babies. We need alliances to get moms who continue to use postpartum to get some birth control so that habits can come under control before more babies happen. We're going to continue to meet. We have an email list. We have a leader on that. And we're going to really continue to encourage everybody, but especially those prenatal care providers, to talk open and frankly to moms about using alcohol and other drugs.
Sorry, we got skipped.
Could you walk out here, please?
Okay, so public awareness. We came up with some really great ideas of what we can do. A couple of them, Be the Shift, Give a Shift, has to do with raising money for public awareness. Four Pillars, Montana Meth Project. We had some information on that if anybody got a chance to see that. Getting together like a Humboldt traveling education group that can go from school to school, talk about the problems of meth. Providing information on the history of meth itself, where did it come from, how did it get started, and how did it end up here, and what media outlets do we have, radio spots, TV spots, print, all that kind of stuff. There's a huge resource that is gone untapped, I think, as far as public awareness goes. Questions that we came up with: what's the organizational structure of public awareness? How are we going to organize it? What other programs are out there that we can kind of, maybe want to partner with us and give us a little bit of muscle? Getting some statistics over time of the neurodamage that meth does to the brain and putting that out there for people to see. Getting together a speakers bureau. There's a huge, huge talent pool, not only in this room but in this community, of people that can speak to the problems with meth, and there's just an amazing, amazing pool of talent that we need to pull from to get people on board so that we can cover all facets of it. Where do we tell people where to start for help and resources? And one of the big ones is, what demographics are we targeting, and how do we target that specific demographic? Also, targeting those that are behind the scenes and providing money to put meth in the streets. So, some of the darker sides of where the money's going. And, again, find out what local media outlets we have and how do we access them.
Who's next down here? Never throw the microphone. Very bad.
So my name is Stuart Altshuler. I have 40 years as a clinician in addictions, and I teach at CR in the Addiction Studies program, and I'm very proud to say about 15 of our students are here today, so I'm proud of you guys. So this is the prevention group, which was as diverse as I could have hoped for, from clergy to attorneys to educators, nurses, doctors, and all the above. So what we came down to was we talked about identifying risk factors and resiliency factors, which basically, what are the things that are more likely to get somebody involved with drugs or alcohol, and what are the strengths in kids, in individuals, in communities, in homes that actually can be developed and nurtured so that the likelihood of continued abuse or starting it would be decreased. So we start knowing that there was general agreement in the group that the younger we start doing prevention and education, the less likely it is that somebody is going to go on to become an addict. And we're talking about finding out from not just the County Office of Education, but going to every district to find out what policies they have on board now, what they're actually doing, especially on the elementary school level. Because sometimes they have policies there, but they're not using them. So the goal would be to identifying what's going on all school levels, including CR and HSU, what's working, what's not working. Because the focus, especially with treatment as well as prevention, is evidence-based. What's working here in the community, but also looking elsewhere. The spiritual support, whether it's Christian, Jewish, Muslim, or Native American, whatever, is an important part of laying that foundation of strength. Community-based programs that already exist, like the after-school programs that actually help keep students safe instead of going home to an empty house. We talked about finding out from social services what already exists, in addition to what's working, what's not working. And who's in the community, like Betty Chin, John Shelter, Head Start programs, Healthy Moms. Healthy Moms is a recurring theme here, I think, for a lot of our groups. And what are the statistics? Public health actually creates statistics in terms of deaths, accidental drug-related deaths, overdoses, deliberate, things like that. And actually talked about exploring the ideas of decriminalization and legalization of all drugs as a form of prevention.
Hi, we're over here in the teen outreach section. And we heard from some of the groups that are working in the community. One is Alateen. It's a 12-step program for 12 to 20-year-olds. And another, we had a great representation from the Raven Project. They're in Eureka. Yes. And see, you guys are so loved. And they stated that some of the things that really work for them is the confidentiality that their constituents receive, and they do a lot of harm reduction in their street outreach and also publish a zine to get information about resources out to youth in the community. There's also the Open Door Teen Clinic, which is... Yes! I didn't get to write down how many there are, but they're all over the county. I know Eureka and McKinleyville, and I'm not sure where else. Crescent City, Arcata. And they are also working on developing a teen resource guide with the youth that are involved with the Open Door Clinics program. Some of the things we talked about that work are peer-based outreach, confidentiality, creating a safe space for people to talk about substance abuse and emotional issues, and including a peer element in that. Some other things that are helpful, just in general, are having entertainment available for all ages, such as the Mars Project, the Apprentice Entertainment Program at Arcata Playhouse, and also some more adrenaline-inducing sports for kids is helpful. what was suggested is maybe focus groups with incentives with youth, and to engage youth that are already engaged in other projects, such as Spare Change Youth or even Raven Project Youth. Some of the questions we came up with are, as some of you have talked about, how does the Montana Meth Project work? Do the scare tactics work? Can we copy this model? Where would teens go for help? And are there residential treatment facilities available for teens? How can we get information into the schools, and some suggestions for presentations and resources for ways that teachers can respond to students while they're in crisis. And then what is the level of education about meth and other substances in the schools? And then one of our colleagues also wanted to talk about a question.
My name is Chad Kemp. I'm a youth service educator at the Raven Project, and I wanted to include that much of the time what motivates youth to turn to hard drugs is unresolved trauma and mental health issues. There is a complete absence of mental health support services available in our community for low-income people, for people who are experiencing poverty. If we're serious about addressing drug issues, we need to create mental health support services for people. We need to have more services available for survivors of sexual abuse. We need to have services available for male-bodied survivors of sexual abuse. If we're serious about addressing hard drug issues, we need to look at the origins of why people turn to those drugs. What's motivating people to turn to those drugs? Thank you.
I'm Fox Olson. I'm with Arcata House Partnership, and we run emergency shelter, transitional living, and permanent supportive housing. We had a very small group of people that were very interested in housing. So the first thing I want to say is there is not enough housing in Humboldt County. So if you're a homeless advocate like I am, you're a housing advocate. We need more housing. And landlords really don't want to rent to people that can't take care of their property. So that said, we had a couple things that we thought were working. One, a woman suggested a multi-approach, which would be medical, a place where people could live, where people were in recovery got an opportunity to stay for an extended period of time, kind of group living. We think that drug court that offers treatment to people and then helps people be accountable is a program that works. We need to view more models that are successful, that are helping addicts succeed. More clean and sober housing. Someone mentioned that the mental health professionals aren't working very well with the medical community, and that co-occurring disorders need to be treated in folks that have marijuana. We need to create more places to offer treatment. There's a gentleman in the room here that's looking for a property to build a facility. His name is, where are you, Don? Come on forward. This guy needs a place. He's ready to offer treatment right now if he can find the right place. And we need sanctuary houses, safe places where people can go. I just want to say one other thing personally. Until this community identifies marijuana as a huge driving force in this community that fuels the methamphetamine thing, until we rebrand Humboldt County, we have a big, huge issue to deal with around that.
Hi, everybody. My name is Holly, and we were the treatment group. And we went over basically what's going on in this community, what we have in place right now as far as treatment for active users. And we have the Humboldt Recovery Center. We have Crossroads, the Bonnie Brown and Lee Brown program, Healthy Moms. A lot of these have been mentioned already. The C Street Detox, STRC Recovery Center, Al-Anon and NA programs, the 12-step programs. We have Singing Trees in Southern Humboldt, Teen Challenge Program, Open Door Health does a lot for active users in our community. And the meat of what we talked about was what kind of our wish list, what we wish we had in our community, and we're going to walk together from here on out to try and figure out how we can make that happen. More inpatient treatment in jail. Residential treatment for co-occurring disorders, which is someone that has a substance abuse disorder and a mental health disorder. Funding for treatment. Inpatient treatment within hospitals. Adolescent treatment, which we're bridging there. Residential treatment for families. That includes dads with kids, not just moms with kids. Detox centers specifically for youth. Harm reduction services, outreach services, services that are driven by the users, maybe needle exchange, that kind of stuff. Housing, obviously, housing first model, which we know works, and again, a bridge with the housing folks. Access to treatment. How can we expand access to treatment? I think this gentleman over here just got that same idea. Maybe like a one-stop shop for anything that someone might be coming in for. Detox subsidies for beds for meth addicts, which is apparently a gap in our community right now. And collaboration between treatment and the courts, more collaboration between treatment centers and courts. Thank you.
Good evening. I'm John Driscoll with Congressman Jared Huffman's office, and our group was legislation. I think we're last, which is, well, we should be last. I'll just pretend. But and the reason I say that is because legislation is a difficult thing to get done, and really to get there, you need to quantify your problem. And you need to be able to ask for exactly what you want. So that's something I think that really needs to be developed by this group and by the county and other local communities as well. So we did talk about a few things. Number one, and this is often common, you know, more funding. There is funding out there for. Many of these programs, and so it would help to identify what funding sources are out there, and then anytime a group or a county or a city is applying for grant money of any significant amount, they really should go out and get the support of their legislators, like my boss, like Senator Noreen Evans and Assemblyman Wes Chesbro. They're happy to support those kinds of things, and with enough notice, they can get letters of support in for those things. We talked about reversing prison alignment, realignment rather. We talked about no nighttime jail releases. We talked about reversing Prop 36, which is the three strikes law. I believe that's the three strikes law, isn't it? I'm wrong. That's a state prop, so I'm not a federal deal. Okay, we talked about reversing Prop 36, and that takes a lot of effort, right? It's a proposition, so it's by the people. You have to actually start a petition to be able to get something on the ballot. I can't remember what it is in California, but it requires a lot of things. I'm getting the line to go up. So that's where I'm going to stop because I see I'm getting the wave off here. So. But it was great to hear from these people. One last thing, and that is we need to collect data on and quantify the problem here, and this group would probably be a great group to do that. So thank you.
And who is your boss?
Congressman Huffman.
Oh.
Chief? How are you, sir?
Good. Well, thank you. As we get started, it's going to be real quick. So I know we're running out of time, and we have a hard deadline at 5 o'clock. Two things to start off. One, we need to make it really clear we don't see ourselves as the solution. All these other things are the solution. We're the stopgap measure to get you so that you can do your solutions. And we want to make sure that's clear. Second part is we asked two questions for our group. What do we need to know about the enforcement efforts and what has been done and what can be done? And then where do we go to get the data? It's all right, man. Everybody's welcome to their opinion. And where do we get the information? And we'll go on from there. So the things we asked were questions is, should we do a community survey to find out from the residents and the community, and that includes the methamphetamine addicted community, of how do we get information and what do they see and what solutions might they have? What kind of process happens when somebody is booked, and can that process be changed? I met with the local pastors today, and that was the question they asked also. We're going to put a panel together to discuss that. I talked to the sheriff. He's all in. So we will discuss that with the community. Some of the handwriting is hard to read here. It's a good thing I wasn't writing. You couldn't read it at all. And then ask the users, can the court system, how are they involved, and can that be changed so that the community has a priority of what goes to jail, what doesn't, what gets heavy enforcement, what doesn't get heavy enforcement, or sentences, I should say. How can we make it cost prohibitive for those that are dealing methamphetamine and other illicit drugs so that they'll stop? And if the cost is high enough, it makes sense, you're just going to have to go somewhere else. Can we deal with drug-addicted children? So how do we, when children are born, is there an enforcement angle that we can have on this? Other counties have DEC program, drug-dependent children, and so forth. So we can certainly take a look at that. And then getting info out to the community on current meth houses, how can we do that? So we're going to research that as well so that everybody can know if there's a house near them, they should keep an eye on it, what can they do, and how can they report information to the police should they want to do that. And then how are they getting meth, and how can it be cut off, and what kind of enforcement is currently taking place around the county. We have a sign-up list up here that we will get the information out to those that want to be given this information, and we'll certainly make sure that we send it to everybody. The second part of it is where do we go to get that information? And we looked at a couple of different places. One is Shasta County, evidently has a pretty good program. We'll take a look at that. PopCenter.org, www.popcenter.org, has solutions from around the world that people have rigorous research that they can take a look at and say this is what has been successful other places. The HomeOffice.com is the Home Office is our equivalent to the Justice Department in London. They've also got some great projects, the Nick Tilley Award and the Herman Goldstein Award, where we can take a look at those efforts to see what else was done. And then lastly, or not lastly, but Lisa Ling did a meth program on Netflix that we'll take a look at and draw information from. And then lastly, as I close, crimesolutions.gov has a variety of publications. It's all evidence-based policing. And again, this is just from the policing side, that people can go to and look at and see what has been successful other places. So we'll draw the data from there to get back with you on.
It's okay. Thank you. So a few weeks ago, I was walking around doing my job, talking to people, and I think if I'd asked what can we do about methamphetamine in our community, most people would say there's nothing you can do. It's just the way it is. We've demonstrated something very different. There's a hell of a lot that we can do. So thank you. Y'all have blown me away. So let's do it. What I'm going to ask is a representative from each group to put together a couple of things, or a couple of representatives from the group. Number one, I wanted to post the highlights from each group separately on the Facebook site for the first request. The second thing, I'd like to ask each of the groups to put together the contact information for the participants, not just the people that were sitting around, but the people who are interested in really stepping up and participating going forward. If you came and participated today, you've already helped. But if you're game for participating going forward, make sure that the group has a coherent list of your contact information and get ready to roll up your sleeves and start looking at some of these research topics and get started. I've kind of tentatively good news. There is a grassroots grant that comes from the Humboldt Area Foundation that we have an application to, and I get on a reasonable good source that we're in a pretty good shape to get it, a couple of thousand dollars, which we could get in a couple of weeks. What I think we'll do with that is to change the venue, change the social media platform from Facebook to a website that's organized for all these specific interest groups to communicate with each other and to communicate with other agencies. Thank you, Facebook, for getting us this far, and we'll take it the next step. We have a volunteer designer and a little bit of resource to do that. So that's what I'm hoping we'll be able to do. And with that, the work product of all of your research, of all of your fact-finding, will have a place to land and a way to cross-pollinate from one group to the next. I'll leave it to each of the groups to decide for yourselves how to organize the way forward. And I'm pretty certain that there's not a single group that's going to consider themselves complete after today. So meet in person if you like. Interact online if you like. Just make it happen, y'all. Thank you. Yeah, so you can use the postings of Facebook to interact and cross-pollinate by leaving a contact information. Or if you're on Facebook with your name, there's an opportunity for you to interact with each other. Also, for those of you that still have a little energy and want to speak, there are members of the media, Humboldt Access, KMUD, that are going to be standing out front and are willing to talk to you about why you're here, what you think about what happened, and I'd like you to participate if you like. If there's somebody who needs a ride downtown, go on out front, raise your hand, and let people know what your needs are. Thank you, everybody, so much.